You're listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, your home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
Welcome to episode 20 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. We hope that everyone listening is doing well. Today I'm here with Gold Leader, Ron Longy.
Welcome, everybody.
He's a little bit tired today.
but I'm here. I made it, and I still have a voice.
That's right. Our targeting coordinator, Andrea Longy.
Hey, guys.
The tallest Ewok, Marcel Manzano.
Yo.
And our historian and flavor judge, Alex Merring.
Hey, everybody.
So on today's show, we're going to be doing a recap of the Chicago Regional. Our crew is kind of in a unique position to give insight on this because we literally had everybody at a different viewpoint. Ron and Andrea were TOs. Ron was judging. Andrea had the slips. I, myself, Marcel, and Alex played. We had the stream going. We had all kinds of things going on. So it's going to be a good chat. Now, before we get into that, I do want to do a Patreon update. So for those of you who are already our Patreon members, those of you who have reached your goal for the Striker and U-Wing, those are already in the mail by the time you're listening to this, so you should be getting those. And those of you who are coming up on that, we'll get that out ASAP. Also, we have a Gold Squadron podcast exclusive Y-Wing that's being made by Mark Moriarty. I do have an update on that. I'm going to be posting that in the next couple days. The art on it is looking awesome. It's a really nice contrast to the Paul LaRue one that we got for the regional. And speaking of that one, we do have some awesome upcoming raffle prizes. I have 12 of those Paul LaRue Y-Wings to give away, as well as 4 of those 12 are signed. And then I also have 10 sets of the Vader versus Ahsoka by RK Post. These were only given away at our Chicago Regional. They're extremely hard to come by, and Ron was gracious enough, and he, you know, him being one of the members of the podcast, saying, hey, let's make sure we get some of our awesome Patreon members some of this swag. If you're interested in becoming a Patreon subscriber, please go to patreon.com/goldsquadron. You qualify for the raffle for these cards at any of the levels, $1, $2, or $3.
Unlock the hologram.
So like we said earlier, today we're talking about the Chicago Regional. I've been talking a lot already, so let's just kind of do a little roundtable here real quick, and let's just talk about your overall experience at the regional. Alex, you go ahead and go first.
I had a great time. This was the first regional that I played the entire day of. The last regional I had, I dropped out about halfway. But I had a great time. I mean, huge kudos and shout out to Ron and Andrea. They run a tight ship, and I don't think anybody in the whole house could possibly have a bad time. It was just everybody was happy. Everybody was it was like a party, honestly. It was awesome. I loved it.
Overall, it was great. I think in general, this is only the third regional ever for me, and out of the three, I think this was definitely the best that I've ever been to, and the most comfortable. I think even though a lot of people get really hyped up for regional system, it's, although it's not considered a premier event anymore, it's still a big event, draws a lot of people. Everybody was happy. You didn't see that. You really didn't feel any tension from anyone. So I thought it was great. I think same thing as Alex said, Ron and Andrea, the kind of event that you guys put together is amazing, and I think everyone out there can learn from what you guys are doing over here.
You know, it was pretty smooth, relatively speaking. Only one person that I know of filled out their slip wrong. That screwed me up. So that's always good. I always like when people fill out their slips properly. But yeah, I mean, from where I was on top of the stage, on top of the mountain, everybody pretty much looked happy. I didn't hear any raised voices except for from Zach Matthews when he just got really excited about his suppressive fire. But other than that, everybody just seemed to have a really great time. So that's what gets Rod and I into these kinds of events is just to create a really fun environment where everybody can just play their games, have a good time.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of had a pretty cool experience itself. I got to do a little bit of everything. I got to judge. I got to work the tournament HQ. I got to comment on two of the live streams. I got to chat with a bunch of different players. So yeah, there was a lot of really cool things. I got to see a lot of cool ships. I got to hang out with Paul. I got to watch him actually play X-Wing, which was cool. And then afterwards, probably one of my favorite parts was after the Swiss, we all went to the local bar Chasers, ordered some much-needed food and beverage, had a couple beers with what, I don't know, it had to be 30 of us there, and just laughed and talked about the day, and I couldn't have been happier. I had a lot of people tell us, oh man, this is either our first tournament or this was our first big tournament or first time to Chicago, and that they just had an absolute blast and wouldn't miss it again for the world. So just a lot of I have to just thank everyone. You know, we could put on the best event in the world, but without the best people in the world attending it, it's still not the best. So I really do think we have a great crowd, and I really didn't have any issues to go over. So you made my job easy, and I like I said, I had a blast.
Yeah, for myself, I did play. Unfortunately, I did. We'll talk more about battle reporting stuff here in a minute, but I did drop out for the Redemption tournament the second day. I decided to cool off after my personally disappointing performance, and I jumped on the live stream and had a great time. It was a lot of fun commenting on an awesome top 16. I think my favorite part of the experience was being able to meet so many X-Wing players in one place, but not only that, but inside of our store. Like, this is, we basically welcomed them to our house, right? And just we made sure everybody was taken care of. We had a great experience with all the players. I got to meet quite a few of our Patreon supporters. One of the top 16 guys, he was actually flying our Asajj card in his list, which was really cool to see. Yeah, it was just overall, like everybody said already, just a really great experience. My first regional, just because of my timing of coming into the game and my daughter being born, but just absolutely amazing. So before we get into battle reports here, I want to touch on what effects did you see Wave 10 have on the meta? Like, what things did you use or did you have used against you that were from Wave 10?
I'll start first. Yeah, for me, I only faced two different things that were Wave 10. One of them was Tyler Tippett flying Wreck with Kylo, so the Kylo crew card, and that was a top 16 match, so I'll talk about that one later. And the only other thing that I remember flying that's Wave 10, which caught me off guard and nearly wrecked my day, was the Scavenger Crane. It was basically a Bossk with the cluster missiles shooting two missiles, with Ketsuonyu taking you down basically two agility down to zero. So, zero agility, double missiles, I'm dead, and then he gets double missiles right back. I mean, that is... Oh, and then he rolls a good roll and still keeps his pseudo extra munitions. So, yeah, those were the only two cards that I remember seeing, but that Scavenger Crane is definitely strong.
Through my six games, I honestly didn't play anything Wave 10. I used Wreck Kylo, and I can go over how that combo went out. in my battle report, but I think I didn't see as much just because it was so new. I mean, it was only, you know, with the shuttle, the TIE fighter, and the quad jumper coming out 2 days beforehand. I don't know if people just weren't comfortable flying it or just weren't able to acquire it in time, but I wasn't super surprised about that, though.
As the TO walking around, checking out what a lot of people were doing, I did see a fair amount of wave time stuff, but I think it kind of, I don't think it made it through the Swiss rounds very well. I think probably because just maybe lack of experience of playing with such new ships. Obviously, Tyler did really well with it, making it to the top, but it felt like the most predominant things we saw out of wave time was either flying the shuttle itself, the Upsilon shuttle, or the Kylo Ren crew card. I did see quite a few shuttles. They weren't scarce. What I was really surprised, I don't think I saw a single. Maybe I did see one Rex, and no Ahsokas, and a very few of the quad jumpers.
Yeah, for me, in my second game of Swiss, I played against triple Upsilon shuttles. yeah. Oh, yes. Are we doing it in Greek? Upsilon. Yes. I played against triple shuttles, and I did win that game. I was able to get around and behind and pull him through, and that was pretty much the game. He called it early. He also used the Hyperwave comm scanner and Lieutenant Dormitz, so he put his first shuttle. He had Hyperwave comm scanner on all of them at PS 12. And said basically, like, I'm choosing them to be PS-12. You may place your squad.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was kind of fun. For the Redemption tournament, we saw tons of Wave 10. People took it as a great opportunity to say, hey, I'm going to bust out my quad jumper. I'm going to bust out my Sabine's TIE fighter. I saw some shuttles less than in Swiss, but... yeah, people took that Redemption tournament as an opportunity to just kind of try it out and start to see what is good. And I believe one of the guys who went 4-0 in the Redemption tournament, I think it was Zach Matthews, was using the Rex Sabine's TIE fighter, if I'm not mistaken. That's why he was yelling suppressive fire every few minutes.
Yeah, I can't really keep track of what happened on what day at this point. It's all just one big blur.
No, but that was definitely in the Redemption event because you knew every time suppressive fire went off.
Yep. You'll hear it a few times on the stream. He was actually, his table was pretty close to the stream table. So, Alex, give us a cliff notes on your battle report for regionals. What'd you see? What'd you play against? How'd you do? What'd you do?
All right. So, to start off, my list was Wreck with VI, Kylo, Gunner, Hotshot, Engine Upgrade, and Countess with the TIE X7 title in Juke. What I was going for, the combo there is... you know, using Rack obviously to hand out those conditions, but also if I have any slippery high agility things to strip tokens with Hotshot and Gunner. And then, especially for low agility ships, anything one and under, even if they have a focus, strip the focus, Ryad follows up with a shot. No matter what they roll, I can juke it, and they have no focus tokens to use it on. So I went 3-3 on the day, ended up 45th. The very first match, I made the worst mistake you could possibly make. And we say a lot of things here with your, you know, practicing your formations and your opening setups and turn zero. I'll add another thing. Practice what you preach.
That's what I was shouting at you when you told me what happened.
Yeah, so... first game, I went up against, it was a Ghost with Auto Blaster and, Rey with like the usual Kanan title and Finn. And so I initially was going to joust the ghost and just burn it down as quick as I could. So I had lined up Rack and Ryad next to each other with Rack along the board edge. And the idea was to bait them with Ryad and then switch spots and have the Decimator fly past her and then just start taking pot shots. And I miscalculated the amount of space I would need to do that leapfrog maneuver and ended up with a off-the-board Rack turn two. So that really sucked. Ryad was able to get half points on the ghost, and that ended pretty quickly afterwards. So, like I said, practice what you preach.
Yes, it was quite funny, you know, when I was telling Alex that, you know, he needed to actually do what we were talking about on the podcast. He said, I had a plan. My plan was just bad.
Yeah, you can have a plan all you want, but if you screw up the plan, it doesn't help. I think my favorite match of the day was I went up against, I think his name was Peter. I'm horrible with names. And he was flying the triple tap Bossk IGB list. And that was heart poundingly fun. It was really a fun game. We kind of just went right. We set up across the board from each other and, with some opportune shots, I was able to get Boss down pretty quick. My original target was IG because he was just hammering Rack with heavy laser cannon, and there's nothing I could do about it because I have no agility dice. But he presented Boss in a way that I was able to burn him down pretty quick, and then Rack ran away, and it was just Ryad chasing IG the rest of the game, which with those dials was, you know, oh, you're not over there anymore, and I'm over here now. So it was a lot of that, but eventually I got him down. So in my very last game, I had probably the worst sequence of events that could have possibly happened in my situation. So I was playing another one of our guys that plays out of pastimes, Nathan. He was playing pretty much hard counter to my list. It was a Lethal Rebel with TLT and Tactician with Braylon Stram with Stress Bot. So at one point, Ryad had like 5 stress on her, so she can't do anything except just go 3 all the time. And there was a point where, and he had the he had a Phantom docked, so I had the ghost down to like 1 hull, and I just needed 1 hull, but I couldn't get it. So eventually, the ghost and Rack just split away, and he deployed Zeb and the attack shuttle behind it. So I was able to, with Kylo, slip 1 damage under Zeb's shields. It only needed 1 more. And so I gave him another condition. And at this point, Rack was pointed towards the board edge, but enough that he could have 2 turned away and still continue on. And so all I needed was that 1 crit to knock Zeb out with the shields. I ended up rolling 3 natural hits, which is the worst possible scenario.
No eyeballs.
And he rolled enough evades where I just took like 1 shield down. So that was garbage. And he rolled a crit that was all your hard turns are red, which, of course, I needed to do a hard turn to get out of my current predicament. And Braylon was close enough to give Rack a stress with Stress Bot. So I now have a stress. All my turns are red. That means I have to do a 2 forward and go off the board.
Ouch.
Oh, dear. So you had your ship go off the board twice?
Yes. But the second time, like I said, that was a culmination of so many different things that had to go perfectly wrong.
That's fair.
So my kind of battle report here, I'll go through. I won't try not to take too long, but rounds 1 and 2. Round 1, I played father, and round 2, I played son. They're pretty interesting. I got to play Ray Mack and Logan Mack. Ray brought 5 Kirax fighters to the regional, and he starts with a comment, something along the lines like, "I bet you never seen nothing like this," or something along those lines. And I had to giggle a little bit because one of our players, Robert Juris, loves the Kirax fighter. and I have played him several times with his Kirak Swarm. So, in an odd way, in my opinion, he helped me win that game because I got to see what they look like when they fly together. So thanks, Robert, for giving me that experience. It was a good game. I did win it 100-0. There was some positioning. I placed a really good rock more towards his edge of the board, and I would say towards his edge and to the left, where with his maneuvers he could not get around it without hitting it if he wanted to approach. Oh, I should have talked about my list. I'm sorry. I flew Paratani. I'm sure there's at least one of you who rolled your eyes. It's okay. I really liked the list.
I was one of those.
Yeah. So I brought Asajj in the middle of the rocks and was just taking pot shots at these Kirax fighters and popping them off before they got to shoot. Manaru almost got to half health, but I was able to get her away fast enough and behind the Kirax fighters to not take any damage. So round two, I play Logan Mack, who brings those triple Upsilon shuttles, Upsilon, however you want to pronounce it. And he uses that hyperwave comm scanner, places them down at 12. And I personally think I won this game in the rock placement. I place a rock approximately range 2.5 from the right side of the board, and set up at around range 2 on the other side of the rock, on my edge, of course. So he had to, and we ended up having the rocks really big diagonal. So the only pretty much big gap that he had was in his right corner, or excuse me, his left corner would have been my right corner if he wanted to get through there. So he was putting down his shuttles a couple ways, and he decides to put them basically in a straight line. He gets that done, and that rock gave me enough time to basically kite him through the rocks. He had to do a couple of suboptimal maneuvers to get around, and Fenn did his thing at range 3, avoided with auto thrusters and focus. He was able to get behind, and that was about the time when I had taken down one of the shuttles already, another one at half. He called it. Overall, good game. It was really scary looking down the barrel of three four dice attack ships. That was really scary. Then, so I'm 2-0. Round 3, I pulled Jeremy Howard. Now, our game was tons of fun. I lost that game in the end on points. My Asajj was at half points. His Ketsu was full. And the game pretty much I would say it was around round 3 or 4 when we were kind of circling the rocks for a little bit. And I decided, okay, it's time to turn Fenn in and see if I can get behind the slaver. I had really good positioning. I was pretty sure he was going to do a hard 3. And I was looking at and doing our template math. And I was like, okay, I think with a 5 forward and a boost, even if he does a 3 hard, I get behind the 180 arc. And if I don't, I'm at range 1. And bad stuff happens, right? And bad stuff did happen. I mean, he was clipping me by the width of a fingernail, and Fenn took 3 damage on that shot, and I had to fly him a little bit defensively, but pretty much that was the game right there. He took 1 shot from Ketsu with the tractor beam, and he was gone. Manaru melted along the way with some Mangler cannon shots. It was pretty bad. Asajj stayed alive. Score was something like 60 something points to whatever half of Asajj is. After that, I played a game with Joseph Castellone. Honestly, I don't have a really good memory of this game. I do know that I won this game. I'm having a hard time remembering what he played. I do literally have the stack of the entire list next to me, but I don't have time right now to sort them. So Joseph, I know we had a good game. We had a good time. I did win that one, so that was my third win. After that, it was me and Tyler Tippett, and the game came down to one decision, one really bad decision I made, again with Fenrau, unfortunately, but not defensively, more offensively. I say, okay, I took initiative, and I had a point where I could have either... I was pretty sure he was going to turn left and pursue my Manaroo, and I had Fenrau behind his position, and I said, okay, if he goes forward, he's going to bump my Manaroo, and I will have a range one shot if I don't boost. But Manaroo was on her last thread. Why not? Why wouldn't he go after Manaroo? I think she had one whole point at this point. So I decided to boost because I said, all right, if I boost and he turns, I'll have a range one shot at him. What I didn't think through is, hey, let me... Basically what ends up happening, let me rewind a little bit. I end up doing the boost one bank, and my block would have been amazing, but I end up blocking him with Fenrau, which is pretty bad. So Asajj gets lit up at range one, and bad stuff happens there. I mean, I had an opportunity to shoot five dice with a focus at Whisper, uncloaked, and I took a risk that I did not have to take. I should have just been patient, and if he was going to turn out, it would have been a range two shot, decloaked with a focus. I mean, it was not a good choice on my part. So, and then my last game was definitely flustered by my game with Tyler making that big mistake, and I played a game with... Eric Tissot. Remember, he played Rack with Riad. It was Rack Riad, and pretty much I was flustered at this point. I wasn't focused, unfortunately. I hit a bunch of rocks, including my own.
Do you see the irony here? You're flying Peritani and you weren't focused. Sorry.
Yeah. So it was a very sloppy game at that point. In order to even have a chance at top 16, I would have probably have had to table him. I had decent MOV, and I wasn't focused enough to do that. But that was pretty much my six games. I wish I would have done a little bit better for myself and for our listeners, because I know that there are some players that came up to me and were like, oh man, really? Come on, you could have done better. and trust me, I know.
I lost money on you, Dion.
Why are you betting on me, man?
I got faith in you, man.
Well, you did break one of our golden rules, Dion.
I did.
You let yourself get emotionally out of check. Like, you normally don't. Normally you're don't. In a really good mood, win, lose, or draw. But you let yourself go to getting, riled by it. Which, you can see, that's how you end up making mistakes.
Yep. And that's why the next day, Redemption Tournament came. I still wasn't right, because I knew that I was emotionally damaged.
We call that being on tilt.
Right, yeah. I was definitely still on tilt, and I was like, okay, you know what? I'm gonna do the stream today. I'm not gonna play because I don't want to give anybody a bad experience. And doing this stream all day put me in a great mood. I was fine. I feel great now. But Tyler and I talked about it afterwards, and he goes, yeah, man, if you don't do that boost, Whisper's dead, you've won the game. And I go, yeah, I know. And Tyler does end up making the top 16 when we get to those names, and yeah. So, just a mini words of advice, right? Try not to get on tilt. I usually, like Ron said, I usually don't, but I was beating myself up at this. Like, I had set up this beautiful block and this kill shot, and I didn't take it because I got too aggressive and. It is what it is.
I will say that with certain players, like, usually the biggest thing that holds them back from improving or realizing their mistakes are the ones that get upset during a game. Because that's when you start making mistakes, and then you don't even realize what mistakes you made And actually, it happened to me. Like, we're not perfect, but, you know, when I played against Philip Horney, like, I was starting to get frustrated with how good he was rolling natural green dice against me, you know. And I think I probably could have won that match if I would have focused a little more. There's probably something I missed or screwed up. But I was more worried about his dice results than what was happening in the game.
Yeah, it happens. All right, Marcel, give us your battle report, because yours is the shiniest of them all, or at least of ours.
All right. Well, first, let me say about my state of mind before going into these games. So 2 weeks ago, we had the Ohio Regional. So I drove with two other Gold Squadron members, Nate and Brandon, on Friday to Ohio. It's about a 5.5-hour drive. Got there around midnight, so got very little sleep. Played all day Saturday, the 6 rounds. Flew what I think you guys already know, the TIE SFs, the RIAD, basically list that requires a lot of precision, no mistakes. Two agility ships don't live very long if you make mistakes. After the match, went out to get some drinks with same as we did here in Chicago. Then Sunday, made it to the top 4, and so it was kind of a longer day, and then drove 5.5 hours back. Then went to play at a league match on Monday, on Wednesday, and then this week played Monday, Wednesday. Came in to pick up my ships on Friday and ended up sticking around to play that pre-event tournament that you guys had. So what I'm trying to get at is, by the time the actual regional started, I was kind of burnt out already. My X-Wing groove was not there. So I got lazy and I just went triple jumps, easy version of triple jumps, which is Mind Link. And my goal, I think I told you, Dion, and a couple other people, I said my goal for the day is to have a smile during every match. And, you know, I'm just going to let the dice roll, have fun. I'm not really feeling ultra competitive. I just kind of just want to have some fun and play X-Wing for the fun of it. So my first matchup was against a guy named Nico, I believe. And if I mess up people's names, I'm sorry. And he flew what I flew. When I said lazy, it was just the triple jumps with Mind Link, Plasmas, and R4 Agromech, with all three with Intel Agent. And my first matchup from the bat, it was exactly what I didn't want to see, which was a Manaru, Fenrau type of list with Mind Link. He had Pelov instead of Asajj, which for me, it's I actually prefer Pelov instead of Asajj, because I can double focus whichever jump master is going to be close to Pelov. So, but it's still a tough matchup. I ended up winning that one. It was not an easy match. It was a tough matchup. I'm not going to do a play-by-play on all of them. Just a few things here and there. My second round match was against a squad mate of Nico named Mark. I think those guys are from Detroit is what they said. And he was flying Bossk Ketsu. And this is the guy that I told you guys earlier on had that scavenger crane with cluster missiles. And for those of you who have seen any of my either Twitch streams or any of the matches that are on YouTube with me and Triple Scouts, you guys kind of get my little formation on the bottom right hand of the corner match, where I kind of just put them and it gives me numerous options, but it's usually the same setup. So I set up that way because he's got two pilot skill 7 ships, and he put himself right in front of me to basically just go straight at me and joust. And usually with triple jumps, if you want to joust me, I'm excited. So I was happy. I'm like, okay, we're going to shoot some dice. I'll probably get a few torpedoes off, and Bossk will probably end up dying in 2 rounds. I miscalculated my ranges, and I was just in range of Ketsu's range 1 to give me the first agility down, and a range 1 shot against one of my jumps, which hit and took me down to 0 agility. Then Bossk shot his cluster missiles, which ended up doing, basically after both missiles were done, the Jumpmaster was dead in the very first round of fire. So he ended up getting the cluster's missiles back, so I'm dead. He hasn't been touched. And he's got his missiles back from the scavenger cranes. It was not looking good. However, when I started shooting back, my dice were more than friendly. And I was able to kind of drill boss down a little bit. And then, I don't remember exactly how I placed myself, but I made a couple turns to try to get a block on, force him to kind of split his fire. And I would split my fire too, because Bosco's already a little bit damaged. Don't remember exactly what happened, but what I do remember is that I landed four crits that entire match. And they were 3 double damage. And one, which one is it? The weapon speeder, the one that makes you roll 1 less die?
Yeah. Well, that's brutal.
Yeah, so when he ended up doing his cluster missile right before dying with Bossk, he only shot 2 and 2. So yeah, that
he was an A-Wing with Snapshot.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And, well, with Snapshot and Guidance Chips, and then he can turn that crit into double damage. So it's still mean, but it's not as mean as it could be. So, and the 3 double damages just basically flipped it around, and I ended up winning that match with 2 Jumpmasters still alive. It's just I think it was just bad luck on his part. He had the better jousting list than I did, and I just didn't see that ahead of time. So my 3rd round match was this. I don't remember this guy's name. I'm sorry, but he was flying a stranger list. He had Biggs with Shara Bay, which is the arc that lets other people borrow her target locks, and Miranda with a missile and a long range scanner, which it just didn't seem to kind of match up, because if you've got Shara Bay, then you shouldn't need long range scanners, because you're just going to borrow Shara Bay's missile anyway. Shara Bay's target lock.
You played against Sean Anderson.
Is that who it was?
Round 3? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so Sean. So that one, I think it was just tailor made for me. That was I don't want to say easy, but it was easy from a matchup standpoint. It's not that he flew wrong, it's just it was Biggs, Shara Bay, and it was not Shara Bay, I'm sorry. It was Biggs, Neera, and Miranda. But either way, basically a bunch of torpedoes or missiles that he had, but 1 agility ships, and Biggs can't protect against the target lock. So I ended up killing both Neera and Miranda before even taking a pot shot at Biggs. I didn't shoot Biggs until after the other 2 were dead. So it was just a bad matchup for him. Round 4 when I saw this was the first time in the entire tournament, between the first 3 matches, that I got a little more nervous, like, uh-oh, I might be in for a tough one here. I was against Jeremy Howard, and actually was right. I think he had just beaten you, Dion.
Yep.
So he had just beaten you, and he was flying Bossk Ketsu, which is the same list, the same 2 ships that I flew round 2. And I won, in reality, only by getting lucky. I really didn't outfly Mark. I just got lucky with my crits.
The major difference there is that Jeremy didn't have any missiles. He had the Mangler cannon.
Yeah, true. And I was actually happy for that. I think if I were to fly that list, the cluster missiles with Scavenger Crane is just so much better. It's the potential for damage is just ridiculous. And the fact that you can keep recycling that missile, it's crazy. So I was a little bit happy to see that the Mangler cannon instead. So for this one, I lined up the way I typically do my normal lineup in the bottom right-hand corner of the map, and he lined up on his bottom right-hand corner of his side, so opposite corners. And with Bossk, he's not very maneuverable, so I put, you know, he had to maneuver through the rocks, and long story short, I got a lot of blocks on Ketsu, so Ketsu wasn't really able to do anything major, anything significant, and I just, I think he just had bad positioning the whole match. I always had either a torpedo on him, a block, or I was out of his Mangler cannon range to where he was shooting me out of the side. So I think I just, that one, I feel like I just maybe outflew him a bit. Round 5 was against Jack and a Peritani.
Yeah, Jack is one of our Patreon supporters.
Well, thank you, Jack, and thank you for proving my point that I do not know how to beat Peritani with Jump Masters. And this particular match, I actually got the perfect setup. I don't think I made any mistakes in that match. I ended up, I don't know if this has ever happened to a Peritani list, but I was able to get Manaru, what's the other one? Asajj, and Fenrau all blocked by 3 different ships. So each ship was blocking one. So you have a Peritani list with no focus. Basically, we have a Dion in round 6 of Swiss.
Oh, come on.
So, and you make it too easy, Dion. Sorry.
Yeah, dude.
So, we have a focusless Peritani with Fenrau at range 2 with a torpedo coming his way at range 2 with no mods and no range 1 bonus. And I roll hit, crit, crit. So I'm thinking like, okay, maybe I can actually pull this one off. And he rolls 3 natural evades. And then the critical that comes through is something that I forgot, but it was just something meaningless, something that didn't make a difference. And in the same shot, in the same round, I also had with the other jump master that didn't bump Fenrau, I had another shot that did not, another range 2 shot, so 2-on-3 without any auto thrusters, and also hit, and he evaded again, natural evades. And then from that point, I committed all my effort to try to kill Fenrau. And I was not able to. So I did get half points on Asajj, so I lost that match 100-20. And the weird part is that I actually think I don't know what I could have done differently. I flew the best that I could. There was nothing I could have done differently that I can think of to get a different result other than dice variance. So it's just not a good matchup for me. And I think this round 6 was on the stream, and the guy's name was Dylan, I think, or?
Yep, Dylan Van Horn.
Dylan Van Horn. I've seen this Dylan before, but I've never met or played him. Very cool guy. Actually really enjoyed, more than playing him, I really enjoyed talking with him. He's just a really cool guy. He had Ray Nora, and I'm sure the video you guys are gonna post it on YouTube eventually, but it's just a bad matchup for him again. 2 ships each with 1 agility against triple jump masters. It's not a good matchup. So I took that one, but again, it's not because he made mistakes. It's just an uphill climb. And that was my my day one.
So we do have all 16 of the top 16 lists. I'm going to be updating List Juggler throughout the week, but some of people are already putting their lists in. We do have all of them. It was funny. I'm not going to say who, but one of the top 16 people did delete their list, and I put it right back on there. We'll go through our rankings in Swiss. So after our six rounds, we had James Croick, top seed in Swiss. He also placed, I believe, in the Minnesota regional, if I'm not mistaken, with and he was flying Connor Jacks with PTL, the title, shield upgrade, auto thrusters, Riad with Juke and X7, and your Palpatine shuttle with collision detector. We had Nate Moore in second place, also with a 6-0 record, flying the Gold Squadron Special. You may not have heard about it before, but it does exist. It's a great list.
And he's made with that list, he's made what? He's made three top 16s already with it.
And yep, that was this year, four.
Yeah. So he's done really good with it.
So the Gold Squadron Special made by Ron is the Trandoshan Slaver with inertial dampeners, Bosk, Zuckus, and Gunner, a naked Binyari Pirate, a TLT Thug with Unhinged, and Torkoal Mux with Twin Laser Turret, giving you 100 points there. Followed by, in third place after Swiss, is Paul LaRue. Ron, you want to take a second and talk about how Paul got to our regional?
Yeah. So if people don't already know, I'm a pretty big fan of Paul LaRue's work. It's kind of the one thing I do kind of collect is his cards. And so I've kind of just chatted him up for a while. You know, we talk about X-Wing and lists and stuff. And, you know, I was like, you know what, Paul? I think it would be really cool if we flew you to our regional. And he was totally game for it. Luckily, we have probably one of the best hosts you can ask for in past times. And they were like, yeah, let's do it. Let's fly Paul in. They paid to send him here from Canada, paid for his flight, put him up in the hotel, which did take a little bit of our budget away from the event this year. But I think it was worth it. And it was great. He stayed at the hotel right by the airport, which was perfect for picking him up and bringing him to the events. And not only did he have a bunch of fun, but he flew a really cool, interesting list that no one else flew. And I was pretty cool to see him put the world champion card, Boshek, into use multiple times.
Yeah, so he had Dengar with the title, Expertise, R5P8, Black Market Slicer Tools, Plasma Torpedo with extra munitions, K4 Security Droid, and Guidance Chips. And yes, he's using every single one of those slots on Dengar. And then the kind of twist here is his partnership, which was a Contracted Scout with Trickshot, R4 Agrimech, Feedback Array, Proton Torpedoes, extra munitions, Boshek, and Anti-Pursuit Lasers. And Paul told us a few of his Boshek-ing shenanigans that he got to do. They were pretty great. He was able to just get some ships in some odd positions and just take them, you know, just getting blocks all over the place and just making ships do weird things. It was pretty great. we'll see if we can get Paul,
it was really cool.
Later on.
Yeah, I'm sure we can. He's a great guy.
And then followed by fourth in Swiss was Nick Tobin, who ends up eventually being, spoiler alert here, he ends up being the champion. And, you know, some people on the stream were like, oh, a Paratani list one, but this is different. And it's only one ship different, but I think the ship that gets swapped out here, it requires you to fly it different than Paratani. So he had Asajj with Atani Mindlink and Latsarazi. He had Manaru with Atani Mindlink. He has space for also an Intel agent, on Manaru. And then the third ship is not Fenrau. It's Palob with TLT, Atani Myolink, Vectored Thrusters, and Gonk. So a different feel. On the stream, he officially gave it the name Pimping Palob because it's Palob and his two ladies. Yeah, I mean, you'll get to see on the stream, if you can go see in the stream record, I'm also going to be posting on YouTube that game, how he flew it. Really interesting list, using Palob to steal focus and work against other Atani Myolink lists. Also, if need be, just using Palob's ability to feed the Atani Myolink if he wanted to, let's say, target lock with all his other ships. Really, really cool list. Then, fifth in Swiss, we had Victor Robles, who was second at the Minnesota Regional, and he ends up fifth here. He ran a Bossk with inertial dampeners, VI, Forlom, Dengar, Zuckus, guidance chips, cluster missiles. So it's that cluster missile boss we were talking about earlier with Fenrau. This Fenrau has PTL, Tidal, auto thrusters, and then with a Cartel spacer with a seismic torpedo and the heavy sick interceptor Tidal. So I kind of saw the way he flew this. He basically flew the sick in front, blew up a rock to give Bossk a lane to try to get some missiles off. And it was interesting in his game that we did stream, that heavy sick buff with the one hole did come into play. So yeah, pretty interesting there. He did lose that game, but it was still really cool to watch this ship that you never see on the board played and used strategically. Then we had Tyler Tippett, who Marcel ends up beating in the top cut. I could not because I make bad choices. Was flying Rack with adaptability, engine upgrade, Kylo crew, and Palpatine. Made it up with Whisper, VI, fire control system, advanced cloaking device. Seventh in Swiss, we had Jeremy Howard with Bossk Ketsu, which we talked about already. Breaking that down, Bossk with Mangler Cannon, Crackshot, Inertial Dampeners, Dengar, Zuckus, Forlom, Ketsu with Glitter Stem, Burnout Slam, Push the Limit, Engine Upgrade, Shadowcaster, K4, Security Droid. Jack Koziel flying Paratani. We had Kyle Adams flying a Dash Miranda build. Kyle went for control bombs. He went with ion bombs and ConnorNet on Miranda. And I will tell you that those bombs did some work on our stream match versus Lyle Hairhurst, whose list we'll get to in a minute. Those ionizations really came into play. Then Jonas Steber playing the Kylo Ren shuttle with Trick Shot, Collision Detector, and Palpatine, and playing his pocket aces of Omega Leader and the Inquisitor. And then we had Marcel, 11th in Swiss, playing his Triple Scouts, Ryan Bell playing what I think for me was the list that intrigued me the most out of all of these, was a Resistance Sympathizer. Yes, that is your PS3 generic YT-1300 that we just got in Heroes of the Resistance with just C-3PO and Rey Crew, paired with a Lothar Rebel with Auto Blaster Turret, the Ghost Tidal FCS Chopper with a docked Phantom of Zeb. We did get that list on the stream. Go ahead.
So, Ryan, he is a awesome guy. He flies at Fair Games, which is in Downers Grove here in Illinois, so he's a local guy. I've known him since I first started playing. He was I started playing at Fair Games before moving over to Pastimes. And he's been playing for quite a while, for a couple of years. So I think it was about 2 weeks ago, the week after I came back from Ohio Regionals, I wanted to start I put the Triple Jump Masters out, and he put out this particular list, and he told me this is what he was going to take to Regionals, and I was thinking, like, okay, like I'm not judging. And we flew, and it ended up being, I beat him, but it ended up being really hard to beat him. Another point about him. So I'm just saying that it's a really good list, even though it doesn't seem like it. But also, Ryan, this was the first time that Ryan ever played outside of his home store at Fair Games, and we're talking about ever. Like, he had never done a local tournament, he had never done a league night anywhere else. This is the first time that he left his home field, and this was the first tournament that he really ever went to. And I was just super excited to see how far he made it. I think, you know, we all were, everybody who knows him. You know, he's just an awesome guy, and I can't say enough good things about him. And he flies his ass off. I was just so happy that, you know, to see how far he made it, and also just to see how happy he was. When he did that, he ended up making it to top eight, and when he won his match on the stream, I was rooting for him, like, right over his shoulder, trying to see if he got that final auto blaster shot on Fen Rao, and he got so excited he threw his hands up and he elbowed me right in the eye. it was amazing. I mean, I got a little bit of a shiner, but it was worth it.
Yeah, we got a really good interview with him on the stream that, again, will be posted on our YouTube channel that we'll talk about a little bit. Let's keep going down here. So 13th in Swiss, we had Joshua Kuntz flying Ray and a Lothal Rebel. Ray had inertial dampeners, expertise, smuggling compartments, the slooping title, Finn and Kanan, because those two work really well together, paired with also a Lothal Rebel, auto blaster turret, FCS, Hera, and Zeb Crew. We also had at 14th in Swiss, Mark Grauberg, another version of Ketsu Bosk. Here we have Ketsu with Feedback Array, Glitter Stem, Crackshot, Engine Upgrade, Shadowcaster, and Dengar Crew, with a Bosk that has the Scavenger Crane that Marcel talked about earlier, Crackshot, Zuckus, Forlom, K4 Security Droid, and Cluster Missiles. Was that the same guy you played earlier?
Yep, Marcel? I had two rematches during the top 16 cut.
Ah, there it is. Okay. So, and then we had Jerry, another one of our Gold Squadron guys. So we had a total of three Gold Squadron members make the top 16 here. Jerry flew a Rebel Swarm. I'm sure that makes some people giddy when they hear that.
He had Blair giddy.
Yeah, for sure. He had Rourke Garnett with TLT and Recon Specialists, two Naked Bandit Squadron pilots, and two Gold Squadron pilots with TLT. And he took that all the way to 15th in Swiss. He did lose his first game in the cut, but played really well. See, it was unfortunate that him and Nate Moore, our other Gold Squadron guy who got in, had to play against each other. So automatically we were going to go down to at most two Gold Squadron members after that first round. And then the top 16 was rounded out by Lyle Hayhurst, also known as Sozin from the Scum and Villainy podcast, flying Peritani. Now, Marcel, I'm going to hand it over to you and kind of talk about, I want you to talk about your run.
Okay, so the top 16. So my top 16 match started on Saturday night at the bar, because my top 16 match was against Tyler Tippett. You guys know him from the Scum and Villainy podcast, which is actually deserves a shout out. I think Scum and Villainy podcast got two people in the top 16, which is awesome.
Yep.
Dom barely missed a cut. So great players over there. But yeah, so we, as Ron said, we all went out drinking, and both Sozin and Tyler were over there, and I knew Tyler was my matchup, so hoping he drank as much as he could.
I think that's actually his secret weapon, because for this past regional and the regional before that, he told me he went out drinking until like basically almost dawn the day before, just doing shenanigans and, you know, karaoke and things like that. And both times he's made the cut, so I guess that's his secret weapon. Being tired and a little hungover.
Well, I beat him. I guess it didn't work. but also, we carried it over because Tyler, I guess, travels without plans, and he had no hotel. So I ended up offering a couple extra bedrooms for him and his dad, and so they ended up crashing at my place. So I think this is the first time that happens, that you give your opponent room and board. But it was.
And then he has to concede to you.
Oh, yeah, I guess he could use that.
He has to throw the match. That's what happens.
Yeah, that's why I won. anyway, so he's flying the rack with Palpatine and Kylo, and I actually felt pretty comfortable with it because I was afraid of running into the hotshot gunner Kylo version because they'll just eat up all my focuses. But with Palpatine, I'm not so worried. And if he ends up blinding me, which he did blind me twice, whoop-de-doo. So, you know, a blind just means I have a designated blocker. It's no big deal. So, yeah, I ended up... this match, actually, even though I think just from what you put out on the board, I had maybe a 75% chance of winning. Just... If two people of the same skill level play this over and over again, I think 3 out of 4 times the jumps are going to win. He played it really well. I think it really one turn in particular made the difference where I made a turn that cleared from two angles between two ships by the width of a paper. And then after doing that, I barrel rolled in front to get a block on Whisper. And again, cleared it by millimeters, and that one maneuver, I think, really is what turned the match around. Because at that point, Whisper was not doing what Whisper does. He wasn't focus firing on the guy he had the target lock on, and at that point, also, I think he did make a bit of a mistake. He took his decimator and flew him straight at me instead of kiting me and making me chase him, which meant that I can block him, and then a blocked decimator means no Kylo action, so you can't do those auto crits that much. Anyway, so that was a fast match, and he played it well enough, and it's just a bad matchup for him. My top 8 match was a rematch with Mark, who was the guy that basically decimated a jump master before even, you know, I had time to blink. So this time when we lined up, I knew I wasn't gonna joust. So this is the only time in the entire tournament that I did a different setup than my usual. And in this case, I set myself up with all three ships basically hidden behind an asteroid. And I talked about it during the last podcast, where I hide purposely behind an asteroid so I can move forward and then have the option of barrel rolling left or right and clear and create whatever approach I want. And I want to control that approach because my turn zero is placement before his Bosk and his Ketsu, so I put myself behind the rock. He places later, so that's his first turn, and then I can adjust and decide whether I want to come in from the left or come in from the right. And I ended up coming in very spread apart, came in from three angles, and this matchup was not, it really wasn't close. I think coming at him from three different angles just made it hard for him. And then my top 4 match was against Jeremy Howard again. It's a matchup that I feel pretty comfortable with. Bosk Ketsu for me is a lot easier than Bosk Asajj because I'm not getting those automatic evades with those focuses. And Jeremy decided to joust that time. I think he said he was talking to you guys, right, Dion, about...
Yeah. Yeah, he pretty much, he's like, hey, what my strategy last time didn't work. So I think I'm just going to try to go at him and see if I can melt some ships before they get to shoot and see what happens. Let the dice decide. That's literally the last sentence. That was it. Quote. You can quote him right there. Let the dice decide. And
so I'll say this about this and about Jeremy. You know, Jeremy obviously is an amazing player. He keeps making top cuts. He keeps making winning tournaments. Him and his brother are great. And even this regional, he only lost two matches, and both matches he lost them to me, to what I think is a bad matchup for him. So he's an amazing player. When you're talking about letting emotion get to you and affect you, I think this is probably an example of that, because the first match was actually really tough, and I needed good dice, and it was a few maneuvers here and there that I guessed right. So there was a lot of thinking involved, and it was a longer match, and there was a possibility for him to win. So I think this time, just by saying, you know what, I tried last time, I'm just gonna joust and let the dice decide. I think that's just kind of like saying, kind of like giving in. I'm not saying that's what he did. It's just that's the impression I get just from what you guys said. That probably wouldn't be his first choice if we flew again. So anyway, without the cluster missiles, he really doesn't have a jousting list without the cluster missiles, and it ended up being pretty one-sided. But I think it was decided when he decided to just try to straight up joust. And I was hearing, actually heard the Twitch while Darwin was commenting. You and Darwin, Dion?
Yep.
Darwin, I think, was batting 1,000 in terms of saying what I was going to do before I did it.
Yep. Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he's like, oh, Marcel's going to 3-sloop and bank and barrel roll. Oh, Marcel's going to go here. Oh, Marcel's going to do that. Again, I don't think I did anything special. It's just kind of the expected. And the final match against Nick, I've known Nick for quite a while as well. He's a local guy, plays in Plainfield. Flew the Manaru, Palab, Asajj. Basically, Manaru and Asajj together, just uphill climb for me. And Palab instead of Fenru, it's a little bit easier for me. But I just overcommitted. And again, I don't think I really made any mistakes there. Just Nick outplayed me. So, he earned it. He deserved it. He played a great tournament. He did not get great dice. I did not get, you know, bad dice. He just flew better than me. And he won it fair and square.
Yeah, so I mean, a absolutely action-packed rounds of the 2 days of how many total rounds is that? 10 rounds of X-Wing. I mean, we got all of it on our stream. All of it's recorded. We're going to be posting those 10 matches that we did record on our YouTube channel, and that's youtube.com/C/Gold Squadron Podcast, or it's probably easier just to type in Gold Squadron Podcast in the search there. Hit subscribe. We're going to be doing a lot more video content, a lot more streams, and throwing games up there. We did hit that 100. We had tweeted and Facebooked, hey, let's try to get to 100 subscribers. That way we can brand it /Gold Squadron Podcast. And we did that today. So we do have that official URL. And if you didn't catch any of the Twitch games, you can follow us on Twitch at twitch.tv/Gold Squadron Podcast. Now, Ron, after all those games, you got to do what you're famous for. You got to be the swag king. So you can kind of talk over that stuff.
We still had a pretty good budget for prizes for the event, even though we flew in Paul and stuff. But over the whole weekend, we gave away 50 sets of Gold Squadron target lock tokens. These were actually designed by our targeting coordinator, Andrea. They're going to be extremely similar design to the ones that you'll be giving away for your Patreon members. They are 3-set tokens, numbered 1, 2, and 3, black and gold. We gave away 110 copies of the RK Post commissioned Darth Vader versus Ahsoka, 150 Paul LaRue Gold Squadron promos. We gave away 4 acrylic championship range rulers from all different types of past actual FFG events. I was able to get in touch with Jerry Vanderstelt, one of the famous Celebration Star Wars artists, and get 2 Darth Vader 24 by 36 limited edition lithographs of Vader just slaughtering some rebel troopers aboard a Corellian Corvette. It's a really awesome piece, limited to 250 people, so I was able to get those for our grand prizes in the raffle. We gave away 40 playmats for the event that were custom made. If you haven't seen the playmat, it's amazing. Our guy at Gamer Mats, who makes those, could not be happier with how they turned out. What'd you guys think of the mats?
I love the contrast of colors. It's like nothing that we've seen in an X-Wing mat. I haven't seen green on an X-Wing mat, but he made it work. It's not a, what I'm going to call, like a cheesy green. It really works and has this like sunburst in the middle. I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, me too. I think that's the nicest looking mat I've seen so far from officials and official mats and other ones. And I think it shows the amount of detail and like the attention to detail and how much you put into it. The fact that you had these mats created, then you had 16 of them with the top 32, and then you had some with top 16, top 8, and then one with champion written on it. I think that's a very nice touch, and it's just...
Yeah, we did have them all stamped like that. Champion, top 8, top 16, top 32. We wanted the people who were playing the event and won them to feel like that was your trophy. You know, you left and you're like, man, I got this mat, I made it all the way to the top 16, etc. I'm really glad that we were able to do that. And I mean, just give an idea of people, like, you know, playmats are what, the regular playmats are what, $40? That's what all FFG playmats sell for. That's what most playmats sell for. We gave away 40 of these. Like, a MSRP, that's $1,600 in playmats. We gave away, you know, all those promos. We also gave away 40 different Paul LaRue alternate art cards, including his complete ever first series of 18 cards and his second series of 18 cards. And he was in-house, so we gave away a lot of these Paul LaRue cards so people could get them signed. Paul was also gracious enough to give us 4 prints himself that we gave away. And then Brian Allen, I was able to get some alt art Ahsoka's IG-88 crew and IG-88 pilot, Generoso crew and Generoso pilot, and I gave all those away. And then Luke Carrington from Fort Wayne was really nice. He painted a YV-666 and 2 different Hawks, one for the Rebels, one for the Scum. And we gave away full expansions, fully painted up for all of our players. And we spread the prizes out. This was not a top and heavy thing. Everyone got something, and we tried to go as deep as we can. I think all the way down to the top 32 players, everyone got something in addition to the playmats. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, my...
I think so. I think the target lots went down to... They were 16 to 32 prizes.
I will say, like, my brother... You know, my brother's just starting to learn the game, and he did, I think, place 119th out of 120. He still came home with 4 prizes. He still had 4 things to come home with. He had the Vader, he had the Ahsoka, he had the Y-Wing, and something he won in the raffle. I'm not remembering what it was, but... He still...
All right. Yeah, and that was the goal, right? Like, you know, I wanted to make sure that, like, people come out, and especially the ones that are coming out just to have a good time, and they know they're not going to win the tournament, right? Like, they know, man, I'm probably going to get crushed, but I want to go, and I want to be a part of the event. I want to get better, and I want to have fun. I don't want to discourage that and make it feel like, oh, man, only those guys who are really good are going to get something. A lot of the promos that I did give away that people didn't even see, like the Ahsoka, the IGDA, actually, I gave all the Brian Allen alternate art promos. There were six women and four kids in the field, and I just gave them all to them just to make sure they got something. So, but that's pretty much it for prize support. I mean, I feel like we did a pretty good job. I hope everyone was happy with it. If there's something they think we can improve on, I'm definitely willing to take any suggestions for next year.
Any interesting, you know, facts about the tournament that you want to cover? Anything kind of things that popped out to you from the tournament?
Yeah, we got a couple that I jotted down. I kept track of all the players. We ended up having 212 players over four different events over 3 days. Although one of the events is really just the special modifications event, where you just bring a custom ship and we give it a prize for whoever had the coolest ship. The winner of that, the guy's from Hangar 19, I can't remember his name, but he's like some kind of like LED specialist. He spent like 5 months custom modifying an Imperial Raider to fully LED light up.
And not only did it fully LED light up, it had like some of the lights, I don't know if you guys saw on the sides, they would actually like light up in sequence. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. And he drilled holes in the Raider itself, so it looked like the different, like, you know, like windows were lighting up in it. I mean, it was crazy. And he, because of the way he does his LEDs, like, he left the thing powered on all day long, the 12 hours, and it never ran out of power, which I don't even know how that's possible, but he did it. So that was kind of our hands down runaway special modification winner. Rules. I was kind of worried about rules going into this event with, you know, wave 10 not really having clarification. But I feel like we did a pretty good job. The rules weren't really much of an issue. Everyone kind of accepted how we ruled on the unknown quantities, and I didn't have anyone complain about any of it. We really didn't get that many questions about Kylo. I kind of thought we'd get a lot. Most of our questions were pretty normal. One of the things I think I had the most questions on that was I actually didn't expect was, you know, just in general, the other condition card, score to settle. I had a lot more questions on that one, but that was pretty easy. The field. I don't know how much you guys took a look at exactly who was in this field for the 120 players, but this was a murderer's row of players. I saw gold and silver dice everywhere. I recognized a lot of these people from other regionals, worlds. Like Jeremy Hauer flew here from Virginia.
Maryland.
Maryland. I mean, there was an amazing level of competitive players in this event. I mean, making it to the top 16 was not easy. I did see a wide variety of ships, and like you talked about, there was pretty much an even Rebel, Scum, Imperial split in the Swiss. And then it was Scum that kind of rose to the top. We had very few drops. Who was the guy that was riding? There was was it the same guy that was yelling on the stream?
Yeah,
Zach Matthews. He had an Upsilon shuttle with a stuffed Wampa, like riding on top of it with rubber bands. And he played that way the whole
that's
weekend.
That's Zach Matthews? I heard you guys
talking. Yeah, that was Zach Matthews.
Okay, so I guess I know him by face, and he was in Ohio as well. I actually still remember. I don't think I'm ever gonna forget him.
You can't forget him. He actually won He actually won our grand raffle prize last year, which was a Brian Rood print. And he was so excited, and he brought the same energy this week, which is just fantastic.
I actually remember him for the opposite, for no energy. Because at Worlds, I remember he got there on Sunday during right before the top cut when I was playing against Paul Heaver. And he was like really jittery and really excited. And then maybe like 5 minutes later, he was passed out on the couch. On one of those chairs on the side. And I guess his buddies that came with him, they messed with him and they put like beer around him and they pulled his shirt up so his belly's showing. And
I was really proud of Nate. Nate Moore, like you said, he's been playing that Gold Squadron special forever. And I was really happy to see him go 6-0 with that list. If I could have played in this tournament, I would have flown the same thing. I think as far as tournament structure goes, like, we stayed on schedule the whole time. I'm pretty sure we about 8:45, we had handed out all the prizes, everyone was done, and we were getting ready to leave and go to the bar. And I want to thank, lastly, everyone that messaged me and communicated with me and on our different social medias, whether it be the live stream, Facebook, Reddit, Twitter. It was great to talk with everyone, and we got a bunch of likes, and that's always great. And like Dion said, we ended up getting enough likes on YouTube to be able to brand our YouTube page. And I, for one, didn't get to watch as many matches as I wanted because I was kind of always running around. So I cannot wait for Dion to load those up on YouTube, and that's going to be my TV watching for this week.
Yeah, so just some quick stats here off of Twitch. We had a total of 1,011 views over our live stream. And that's
awesome.
Chicago Regional.
I did notice when I was doing the coverage with John for the last two rounds, I covered Marcel's match, and I covered Jerry and Nate's match, Marcel's match against Dylan in the Swiss, the last round. And when I was doing it, we had almost 200 people watching the stream at one time. So it was really awesome.
No, I was saying that it's kind of cool the way that I gotta give Dion and you round the credit. I'm just kind of like tagging along with what you guys put together. But right after I got beat by Nick in the final, I had Facebook messages from different places in Europe saying they just finished watching the stream and giving me advice on how to better equip the Jump Masters. Which is great. I'm like, it's so cool that the Twitch was reaching all over the world, and I actually don't mind if they look me up on Facebook and send me stuff and basically tell me, hey, you did great, but have you ever thought of this? Because a lot of the time that's great ideas, better than what I would come up.
Yeah, that's totally awesome, especially coming from the other side of the world, because it's really weird. Different parts of the world just have completely different metas. So, there are things that they are running over there that, like that, like at Worlds when Benjamin Lee brought the Manaru Ultrarock Fenrau list, I had not seen that in the States anywhere. And apparently it was something that was really big over in Europe, and they brought that over and he did well with it.
So we want to thank everybody for listening to episode 20 of the Gold Squadron podcast. If you ever want to email us, get in contact, send us a list, suggestions, you just want to chat, you can email us at goldsquadronpodcast@gmail.com, or you can go to our Facebook page, look us up, Gold Squadron Podcast, and feel free to send us a message down there. Please like us. We're trying, I think our goal here for 2017 is try to get to 2,000 likes, and we are on our way. If you're in the Chicago local area and you want to stop by the home of Gold Squadron, and you can look us up on pastimes.net/StarWars to join our group. And also our YouTube channel now is up and running, and that is youtube.com/C/Gold Squadron Podcast. It might be a little easier just to, you know, do a little search for Gold Squadron Podcast on YouTube. Like I said, we're going to be posting all of the stream videos along with their commentary. That's going to be great. And go ahead and subscribe so that you can get updates. We're going to be posting tutorials and things like that in the future. Super excited for that. And if you want live updates on our Twitch activity, when we're going to be streaming, go ahead and follow us on Twitch. That's twitch.tv/Gold Squadron Podcast. One more time, I want to say thank you for Ron, Andrea, Alex, and Marcel. Thank you for listening. Gold Squadron out.